Emessing About Productions presents Emessing About, a podcast about nothing. Hello, I'm Ian Hayden, an award-winning comedy writer who happens to have MS and who happens, as always, to have sitting across from me, Katrina Christensen.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm super. How are you?
I'm fine. Katrina's a singer, a pianist, a carer, a train driver, and she knows our sponsor, Solace Sleep, Australia's number one manufacturer of adjustable beds, and you can check them out at
www.solacesleep.com.au.
Right. Well, do you remember a while ago we were talking about Australia's only Aboriginal female bushranger, Mary Ann Bug?
We were.
And she hung out with Captain Thunderbolt.
I know, what a great name.
You love his name.
I do.
And she had 13 kids.
She did, what a woman.
To lots of lovers, I think, only one to Thunderbolt. Anyway, I started thinking about other Indigenous Australians people might not know.
Oh, do tell.
I will.
Okay.
Around the same time was King Billy of Tasmania, William Lane or William Lanay, depending on how you pronounce it.
Okay.
He was Tasmania's last male Aboriginal, full-blood Aboriginal.
Okay.
And the reason he was called King Billy, he was invited to some regatta where he met the Prince of, the Duke of Edinburgh.
Right.
And was introduced by the Premier as the King of Tasmania. Because he was their main Aboriginal person. But when he died, I think he died of cholera and dysentery or something his 30s, they cut off his head and dismembered him for scientific purposes. And then the London, I don't know, Society of Surgeons argued with the Tasmanian. They wanted the body sent over there so they could muck with it. But a fellow by the name of William Crowther, who was a surgeon, broke into the morgue, cut off his head, replaced the skull with a white man's skull and took it so he could have a muck around and a bit of a look to see.
What are they trying to find?
He was trying to find if the brain had changed because he was quite well educated compared to the non-educated Indigenous. But they were shocking. The really weird thing is William Crowther, who did this atrocity, became Premier of Tasmania.
Oh, goodness.
And he's a relative of a friend of mine who's a Swami.
Wow.
She lives in Hobart. She doesn't like to mention that.
No, I can imagine she wouldn't.
And I've got another one. He's actually on one of our notes, like the $50 note. David Unipon.
David Unipon.
Yeah.
I think I know his face.
You'd know his
but
face.
I didn't know his name.
If you've had a $50 note, you'd know his face.
Yeah.
He was known.
David Unipon.
He was known as the Australian Leonardo da Vinci.
Ah.
He was an inventor.
Wow.
Now, in 1914, before the First World War,
yes,
he invented a thing using two boomerangs put together to make, that's him?
Yeah, that's
to
him.
To make, he was a pastor and a speaker and an inventor. He was obsessed with inventing perpetual motion. But he invented this thing with two boomerangs, which was a helicopter, because he looked at how the wind lifted one boomerang, put two together and spin them, and is capable of lifting weight.
Yeah, right.
That was 1914. The first helicopter was invented in 1939.
So did he invent it?
He did.
Wow.
But it was never used. But it was an incredible brain. So he's one we don't know about. One you do know about.
Yes.
Is Douglas Grant.
Right.
Because he went to my boarding school and he was the one who was rescued after a massacre in Cairns as a baby by two archaeologists, and they brought him up as his own, and they were Scottish.
That's right.
The Grants were Scottish, so he grew up with a Scottish accent. And when he went to World War One and was the head of the Red Cross in the prisoner of war camp, and a bit of a curiosity because the Germans haven't seen a black person.
No.
But the people who hadn't seen a black person with a Scottish accent were the Scottish relatives he visited after the war.
Absolutely.
That's a bit strange because he played the bagpipes as well.
Oh, no.
But anyway, he's a bit of a hero. And speaking of Aboriginal heroes.
Yes.
Yarri.
Yarri.
Yarri. He's known as the hero of Gundagai, where I grew up.
Oh, wow.
Because in 1852,
yeah,
Australia's worst ever flood happened. It killed 80-something people, wiped out the whole town of Gundagai.
Goodness.
Because it was built on the flat next to the Murrumbidgee River.
Ah, okay.
It now is built up on the hill at the side of Mount Parnassus. But Yarri and his little mate Jackie,
oh, what a great name,
hopped in their bark canoes,
yeah,
and rescued 69 people out of the trees that they were hanging on to,
wow,
for dear life. And there are still relatives of those 69 people living there today.
And I wonder,
see, back then in 1852, racism would have been rife.
Absolutely. So I wonder how many of them had to be pushed to get into that canoe. Not pushed, but really highly encouraged.
Oh, no, if
you're
encouraged, on your rooftop or in a tree and
you think you'd take it?
Yes, you
would. Well, I mean, I would, but
he was known as the hero of Gundagai,
yeah,
but
wow,
when he was an old man, he was a victim of racism because they didn't know who he was. He was really well respected. Anyway, he's got a brand new, a very shiny grave in the North Gundagai Cemetery, and I mention that because,
yeah,
that's where my parents now reside.
Oh, okay.
And it's where we mentioned Captain Thunderbolt.
Oh, is he there too?
No, Captain Moonlight is.
Captain Moonlight?
Moonlight.
Did he know Captain Thunderbolt?
I wouldn't think so.
Oh.
But Captain Moonlight is our only gay bushranger.
Oh, okay.
And his dying wish at the gallows was to be buried next to his friend and lover, James Nesbitt, who was in an unmarked grave in the Gundagai Cemetery. And it took till 1995
for him
to be exhumed and placed next to his lover.
And who did that for him? Was it family or was it just activists?
It was two women in Gundagai who campaigned to get it. And just down the hill from Moonlight's grave is the grave of Constable Edward Webb Bowen, who was shot by Moonlight.
Right.
After Webb Bowen shot and killed Nesbitt. And Moonlight held him in his arms as he died.
Nesbitt.
And then shot the constable and killed him.
Yeah.
Shot him in the neck, killed him. And then cut off a lock of Nesbitt's hair and had it made into a ring which he wore to the gallows. There you go.
That's so romantic.
So sad. And in that same cemetery, there's Dr. Charles Louis Gabriel. And I've got a book of his out there. He's a photographer at the turn of the 1800s, 1900.
Yeah.
He was a surgeon. He was known as Gundagai's most cleverest man, sort of thing, because he played footy, he played tennis, he took photographs, he was a surgeon. He was a black man too, he was from the West Indies.
Yeah, right.
And he fought for the hospital to accept anyone of any colour.
Okay.
So that was nice. And in that grave, the grave cemetery, there are graves that are very ornamental thanks to a sculptor by the name of Frank Rusconi. And you've never heard of him either.
No, I haven't.
He
sounds Italian. Rusconi.
Rusconi. One of his sculptures is the dog on the tucker box.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right.
And he was the sculptor of the two war memorials and cenotaphs in Gundagai.
Oh, wow.
And if you're going through, there's a little tourist centre that has Rusconi's marble masterpiece. It's a cathedral with 21,000 pieces of marble that he hand-polished.
Wow.
And it took him 28 years to build it.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah. Anyway, I remember Frank, when I was about 9 or 10, on his front veranda, waving to him.
Wow.
Gosh, all this talking about people we don't know much about. Here's a commercial for something we've never heard about. Sunbeam Chicken.
Sunbeam Chicken.
Oh, yes.
There's no chicken better than a Sunbeam Chicken. No chicken sweeter than a Sunbeam Chicken. None more tender than a Sunbeam Chicken. Honest to goodness, Sunbeam Chicken. Honest to goodness, Sunbeam Chicken.
welcome back. We're talking about people that we don't know anything about that I was coming across. And you mentioned Rusconi being Italian.
Yes.
I've got an Italian-Australian by the name of Raffaello Carboni.
Oh, I love it. Yes, it just rolls off the tongue.
You want to order that? We'll get that with the garlic bread.
Oh, yes.
A Raffaello Carboni.
Sounds like a sausage.
Yeah. All right. Now, Mr. Carboni.
Yes.
Don't they call him Mr. in Italian? What do they call them?
Oh, I should know this.
Anyway, Mr. Carboni was a linguist.
Right.
Who spoke Italian, French, German, Spanish and English. And he was a composer and an author. Hmm. And he was travelling all around Europe, having a good old time, settled in London, saw in the paper that gold had been discovered in Australia, threw himself
gold.
On a... Gold? Gold! 1852, arrived in 1853 to get a fortune in gold, became a mate of Peter Laidlaw, and he was one of the leaders of the Eureka Rebellion.
Oh!
And he wrote about it. So Mr. Carboni's worth having another look. I think he's... He was charged with treason but got off because the jury took the miner's side. I've got a description of him.
Okay.
He's described at the time as a shrewd, restless little man, under the middle height, with reddish hair and red beard cut short and small hazel eyes that had a fiery twinkle beneath a broad forehead and rather shaggy eyebrows.
Very
so there you go. And while we're on the, while we're down in the Victorian minefield.
Yes.
Lola Montez.
Oh, Lola Montez. Mm. She sounds saucy.
Well, yeah, she could be a taco. We'll have a Carboni and a Montez. Oh, but Lola. Her name was Lola. She was a showgirl.
She was.
She was a showgirl. And she was born in Ireland.
All right.
Went to Europe, became an exotic dancer, and what they politely call a courtesan.
A courtesan?
Yeah, she was a lover of King Ludwig of Bavaria and Franz Liszt. I think courtesan is just a nice word for a rather loose woman. She had lots of lovers, three husbands who died mysteriously, and she died at 39 of syphilis.
Ugh. Ugh. It does sound nicer, though, doesn't it, courtesan, as opposed to...
Before she got to the syphilitic stage, though, she was a bit of a good looker.
All right, yes.
And she came out to the goldfields to entertain the miners with her exotic dancing.
Oh, did she have feathers?
She had a layered dress.
A layered dress?
That her signature piece was called the Spider Dance.
Oh.
And she'd dance around the stage... pretending there was a spider in her dress, pulling back the folds and looking for it and flicking it and doing a little strip tease as she hunted for the spider.
Okay, exposing.
Yes.
But you had to be really quick to see it.
And the climax was a high kick.
Oh,
and
right.
She never wore underwear.
Oh.
So all the miners, she was packing out 300 to 400
then
people.
Then we saw the spider.
Yes, looking for, yes. And it outraged people like... families, and they were protesting about Lola.
Yes.
She spent nearly a year here, and the editor of the Ballarat Times gave her a bad review.
Oh.
So she went into his office with a whip and whacked him around the head with
it. Good
honour. Oh, yes. So Lola's worth doing a bit in history, isn't she?
Isn't she? I think I might have to go and read about her too.
Yeah. And Snowy Baker, he's one of my favourite Australians that nobody knows about. And Snowy went to the 1908 London Olympics.
Yeah.
He won a silver medal in boxing. He represented in swimming and diving.
Wow.
And he played rugby for Australia. He was a champion equestrian.
Oh, he's a very all-rounder.
He did every... Yeah, I can't remember all the sports he did. And then he was Australia's first... What do you call him? Pin-up boy, silent movie star.
Oh.
Because he was very handsome and a good horseman.
Well, I can imagine
so
he would be.
Yeah, because back then...
He had a lovely physique.
Oh, yes, gorgeous man. He was a rower, cricketer.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, he... water polo, I think. And then he left Australia for Hollywood.
Yes.
He starred in, or got a bit part in a couple of movies. And then he... He was managing a polo establishment. What do you call it? Polo club.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
yes. You know, posh club. For, and he taught actors like Douglas Fairbanks and Rudolph Valentino and Elizabeth Taylor and Shirley Temple how to ride horses and fence and swim. So he... But what made me go on from him...
Yeah.
...was the first Australians who went to Hollywood. Because we it's riddled with Australians now.
Oh, it sure is.
There's Hemsworths running out of the place.
Yeah, and Margot Robbie's, Nicole Kidman.
Nicole Kidman, yes.
Yeah, and Russell Crowe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I was thinking about the forerunners to them. Errol Flynn.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, in like Flynn. Peter Finch. He was the first Australian to win an Academy Award. And Rod Taylor. Do you remember him?
I know the name. Why? What was he associated with?
He became a Hollywood star. He was an Aussie. But he was in The Birds.
Who was the one... Alfred Hitchcock. Who was the one that played Bond?
Australian?
Yes.
George Lazenby.
George Lazenby, right.
That's the only movie he ever did, I think.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, Rod Taylor was a bit of a hero. But I was thinking about bits that you don't know about these people, like Errol Flynn. Most people know him as a swashbuckler.
Yes.
Do they know he went to a school in Sydney called Shaw and was expelled?
For swashbuckling?
he said it was. He said it was, but it was for stealing money from another boy's locker.
Oh.
But he told the world it was for having sex with the laundress. Rod Taylor.
Yes.
God, I wish I could think of a movie. You'd know his head.
I'll Google him.
Rod Taylor. Apart from The Birds, what else was he in? He was a bit of a leading man. I think he was in a television series called Hong Kong. But the only gossip I've got on him is he came out to Australia, I think it was about 1971, to do a movie called The Picture Show Man.
Oh.
Where back in the days when they used to... Yes, good-looking man.
Yeah, he is a good-looking man.
Dark and handsome.
Yes.
Enjoyed drinking and smoking too much, right. But like Australians in Hollywood do. But so he came out to do The Picture Show Man, which was about the old days where the pictures used to travel around and people would come and see them. And in it was John Mellion.
Right.
And an actor I knew called Johnny Ewart, I think, was in it. But they shared a house... Rod Taylor and John Mellion, and they both liked to drink. They'd had a big session and a bit hungover in the morning.
Yes.
And Rod Taylor got up and made himself a coffee. And Mellion came out of the kitchen and found an empty coffee jar. And he had a look at the cup of coffee that was left, and Rod Taylor spat in it and said, "It's mine."
Oh.
So John Mellion spat in and said, "It's no one's."
Oh.
Hey, man. I just thought I'd throw that in a little bit.
Thanks.
Yeah.
All right. Is that a wrap? Oh, before we go.
Yeah, before we go.
Because you said, what was the name or what was the word for mister in Italian?
Yeah.
And it's signor.
Signor.
Yeah, signor. And... Hey, Rory.
All right. Goodbye for now. It's been lovely.